here in the state of Texas this past Sunday in the city of Waco, a dispute between rival motorcycle gangs erupted in violence, leaving 9 people dead and almost 200 under arrest. Now an entire city is in fear, and many law enforcement agencies in local areas are concerned about what might happen in regards to retaliation with all of the arrests of these rival biker gangs. You know, one of the things that I believe is important to point out in this situation is that the Bible says in the end times, lawlessness would abound. When these kinds of events take place, one word seems to describe them, lawlessness. And I believe it's important to consider these facts. The Bible tells us that we are to fear God. That is to have an awesome reverence of who He is and what He has instructed us to do. One of the things that I've noticed in the world is that the less people fear God in heaven, the more we fear each other. Right now, law enforcement is fearful of what a rival gang might do in retaliation for them doing their jobs. Right now, citizens are fearful about what's going to happen in their city next, considering that this violence has erupted. When a simple fear of God and a reverence for His word could cure a lot of problems.
Well, there you go. I'll tell you what, that was our good friend Mike Hagee from San Antonio. San Antonio, that's the home base of the Bandidos. He would know. He would know about this kind of thing. And seriously, that is about just as probably the most intelligent thing that I've heard on the mass media, be it from NPR to Fox News, on the subject of Waco. As of yet, so it's really just been a disaster of stupidity and disinformation from, you know, I mean, it's God, where do I begin? First, I would like to say that I have not now, nor have I ever been affiliated with an outlaw motorcycle gang, never done business with an outlaw motorcycle gang, but I've known some of the folks. I'm not an expert on this subject, but there's just been so much garbage out there that I really feel like I had to, well, I just do a whole darn show on it. So let's go back to the 1950s, because that where it all began, the motorcycle, the whole motorcycle gang thing. So back in the 50s, there were a lot of veterans around, and a lot of working class guys who were making some decent wages. You know, we had the unions back then. And a lot of GI Bill guys had a little extra money on their hands. And the thing about motorcycles is, well, let me put it this way. Let's flash forward to right now. Okay, I've owned like 30 or 40 of them, motorcycles in various stages of disrepair or building, two or three at a time, since I was 16. So, if I wanted to, I have a garage, I have tools, and I have a little stool to sit on. And if I wanted to, right now, I could go out and spend $1,200 on a used motorcycle, throw another $800 into it, strip it down, you know, punch it out, get the maximum horsepower out of it. And when I was done, for an investment these days of $2,000, I would have something that's so fast that it could rip your arms out of your sockets. If you wanted to buy a car or build a hot rod that would go that fast from, like, say, 0 to 120 miles an hour, that would cost you about $150,000 or $200,000 to be able to go that fast. So that's why the motorcycle has always been kind of the working class guy's cheap thrill. I mean, if you really like to go fast, and I'm telling you, it's a lot of fun. So when disposable income, you know, kind of hit the Levittown folks, the veterans and stuff that came back, were kind of looking for something to do, and just your general working class guy who wanted to, like, put something together that was really going to be thrilling with all these new highways that were built. Motorcycles is where it was at. That's when the whole kind of thing picked up. Now, around the motorcycle enthusiasts began, there's a whole subculture. And I think it was called the American Motorcycle Association or something like that. Essentially, they would rent like a horse track, you know, like a 1 mile horse track, and then they would hold. It was like the circus coming to town, and they would hold flat track races where they race around on the dirt racetrack, and they maybe had some a little bit of trial stuff. They'd set up trial stuff, which is like slow motocross, and motorcycle enthusiasts from this is the 50s again, motorcycle enthusiasts from you know, with hundreds of miles around. Would gather at these motorcycle events and watch the races and stuff. Now, you have to understand that somebody who's going to go in their garage and take a 1950s technology motorcycle, punch it all the way out, get the maximum horsepower, strip it down, and just go out and just open the throttle all day long, hit the turns, scraping the pegs and all that, that's a kind of person, you know, it's a thrill-seeking kind of a person. And a lot of thrill-seeking kind of persons, they tend to, you know, be a little on the wild side. So a lot of these motorcycle events that used to go on, everybody would, after the event, everybody would go into the local town, buy all the beer in the town, so that everybody, you know, loved it, that owned the bars. And, you know, there'd be a few fights, you know, because, like I said, you know, if you're crazy enough with nothing but your trusting your own mechanical skills and improvisation and lay that thing down into a turn at 75 miles an hour and open the throttle and maybe the chain will break and rip your leg off or a spring will break and you go down your red stripe on the pavement, gone. You know, I mean, it's a special kind of person that does that, and they also tend to be a little crazy. They kind of go together, all right? The president of there was a very, very famous article written by the then president of the American Motorcycle Association, whatever they were called, in response to a lot of the sort of fear-mongering yellow journalism that was being done in the 50s about the threat, the menace of this motorcycle culture. And in that press release that he put out, he said, look, 99% of motorcycle enthusiasts in the United States are good, hard-working family people. It's just that 1% that causes the problems. If you've been listening to the news, you've heard this term 1% thrown around. That is not a new term. That's been around since the 50s. So when, as motorcycle clubs, you know, move forward into the 60s, and discovered that kind of camaraderie could all, you know, they got into some weird stuff. Which eventually evolved into prostitution, drug running, gun running, and strip clubs. You know, real low-level, blue-collar sort of criminal stuff. They took that 1% on as a moniker. They called themselves 1%ers. So if you see somebody wearing a patch that says 1%er, that means they're an outlaw motorcycle gang. And an outlaw motorcycle gang is totally different than people who are in motorcycle clubs that you still see. Take for instance in Houston, and you're riding down the road, you know, and you see this guy, and he's dressed kind of and all this biker stuff, and he's got a patch. It's like, you know, Riders for Jesus, or you know, the Joel Osteen Wreckers, or whatever. You know, those are not 1%ers. 1%ers are organized crime motorcycle gangs that are proud of it. I mean, they advertise themselves as that. Okay, so what happened in Waco? That thing goes way, way back. That goes way. That's a 30-year-old gang war that's been going on. The Bandidos are a motorcycle gang that was founded in San Antonio about 66 or 67, and it really picked up around the 70s. And it's a 1%er gang. That means outlaw, okay? Now, the Hells Angels were moving east from California, and they tried to move into Texas and sort of come into this territory. This is late 70s, early 80s when this started. They didn't do very well. And a lot of people got murdered. and that, so they sort of backed off. But they're they've been fighting the whole time, and it is a turf war to control this low level blue collars kind of stripper prostitution protection racket empires, if you call them. They're not considered a threat by the society at large, because basically what they're dealing in is not really they're not pinching anybody else's turf. They're just pinching each other's turf. So what happened was the Bandidos, who control Texas as well as many other states, threw a party in Waco with four of their affiliate three other affiliate motorcycle gangs. And it was a party, it was just a party. And the Twin Peaks thing, they were happy to have them because they drank like crazy and tipped like drunken sailors. So this a gang called the Cossacks, who are affiliated with the Hells Angels, decided to come to the party, and they wore this patch on the bottom of their jackets that said Texas, which is forbidden by the Bandidos. You cannot have, because they own Texas. So if you have a patch on your jacket that says Texas, that's like giving them the finger. And they don't like that, so they kill you. So anyway, I don't know whose management decision that was over at the Cossacks to just go crash the Bandidos party and ride up. And everybody's talking about, somebody ran over somebody's foot, or they parked in the wrong parking spot. This is bull crap. I mean, they knew exactly what they were doing when they rode in, that it was going to be a gang war. I found it interesting that, the only people that got killed were all bikers, and they did not hit any innocent bystanders, unlike the police usually do. And it'll also be interesting to see how many people were actually shot by police and not by gunfire. They've been real. Nobody's saying anything about that yet. So I've been reading a lot of social media, and also my good friends in the Black Lives Matter movement have brought up the fact over and over again that, and actually I'm completely sympathetic with this point of view that they're saying, is that the outlaw motorcycle gangs, who just were responsible for many deaths and a lot of injuries, are not being referred to as thugs. They're and they find that kind of as an affront, because they are actually conflating protesters with outlaw motorcycle gangs. And the protesters are being referred to as thugs, and the outlaw motorcycle gangs are being referred to as outlaw motorcycle gangs. So let me explain something. I want to be perfectly clear about this. If you have a thug in your face, there is a good chance you might be able to talk your way out of it. You might be able to give them $100 to leave you alone. There's all kinds of ways that you can handle thugs. If you have an outlaw motorcycle gang, 1%ers, and they're in your face, you better have a jetpack on and a place to stay in Australia, because they are going to kill you. They're way more crazy than thugs. Thugs are like way, 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 way down the scale from motorcycle gangs, outlaw motorcycle gangs. Outlaw motorcycle gangs are extremely dangerous. I mean, they are arguably more dangerous than the police, if you piss them off. Outlaw motorcycle gangs are not out there trying to change your consciousness. They don't threaten corporate America. They do not. They're not out there. There's nothing revolutionary about them. They are gangs, and they are out basically for their own interests. And that's it. And there's nothing revolutionary about them. They're not a threat to corporate America or Wall Street, or basically who are two bigger gangs, corporate America and Wall Street. And the biker gangs, they're pretty crazy, but they don't hurt nearly as many people. So it's a misunderstanding to conflate whether or not you're calling biker gangs thugs. Because when you say biker gang, you're inferring thug at the minimal level. Go up five more levels, that's how scary they are. They're not thugs. I mean, they're going to really give you a hard time if you mess with them. That's what they do.
This morning, charged in connection with the bloody brawl that left 9 dead, 18 injured. There's fear of retaliation right now, and ABC's Philip Mena is in Waco with the latest. Good morning, Philip.
Robin, good morning. Law enforcement here still very much on guard this morning. You know, in the wake of the shooting, a statewide bulletin was issued stating that gangs had an order to kill anyone in uniform.
Okay. That's why I played that clip. Because, all right, people are saying that the gangs are getting a pass by the media because they're not calling them thugs, or they're getting a pass by the cops or whatever. And that clip, what that guy just said, was that the motorcycle gangs were going out and they're targeting police and they're going to kill police. That is the biggest, and that's been repeated everywhere in every media outlet. That is like... even worse than the propaganda that they're putting out against, protesters. I mean, that is a real... I mean, I don't know who they pissed off, because basically they just went out and shot each other. But I don't know who they scared to make Charlie Rose go out and lie for, Northrop Grumman because of some bikers and tell lies on that. There's no way, no biker gang in the history of the most hideous biker gangs have ever put hits out on police, although they did put hits out on snitches, who turned out to be police, and then they retracted that. So that is complete crap. So they are not getting any kind of a bypass by the media. Or who the hell in the police forces in Waco put that out that biker gangs were targeting police? They're going to kill the police. Come on. I mean, what is this, RoboCop? Come on, really? Jeez. This ain't Detroit. This is Texas.
Police made a mistake, or somebody made a mistake in Texas, and they let three of these guys out.
Oh, this is Bill O'Reilly.
$1,000 bail, the rest of them being held on $1 million. And so they're at large, and they're trying to hunt them down. Now, you were in this gang, Bandidos, for 20 years. Tell us about the operation.
Okay, we're just going to count how many times Bill O'Reilly doesn't know anything about about what he's talking about. This guy, Winter Hall, that he's interviewing was never a leader of Bandito. So that's error one, so let's go.
Joining us now from Grand Rapids, Michigan, Edward Winterhalter, former leader of the Bandidos gang. Yeah. I just want to...
Never a leader.
Now, you were in this gang, Bandidos, for 20 years.
No, it wasn't 20 years.
Tell us about the operation.
Well, I wasn't actually in the club for 20 years. I was an associate for the better part of 20 years, and then I was a member for seven, so...
What's an associate? Do you just get to hang around on Tuesdays, or what is that?
Well, I just... There was no Bandito chapter in Oklahoma. I lived in Oklahoma, so I spent a lot of time visiting them and other places when I was out riding my bike, and okay. I didn't want to leave Oklahoma.
What do they do? The authorities tell us is it a big drug dealing outfit, methamphetamine, pot, that kind of thing. Is that true?
No, that's not true. That's about as far from the truth as it could be. 60 to 70% of the guys are just regular guys that have jobs, families, and kids. They go to work each day like everyone else does, and they come home. The only thing they're guilty of is having a little too much fun on the weekends.
All right. Was that your status? You didn't commit any crimes? You just want to be part of a motorcycle club?
Well, everybody gets involved because of the camaraderie and the brotherhood and the love of Harley-Davidsons to start with, but also they're searching for something that they didn't find during their childhood, or they're trying to find something that they had when they were in the military.
All right,
again, except camaraderie and brotherhood.
I don't want to glamorize this crew because obviously you saw what happened in Waco and a lot of people killed and injured and they're armed. And we do know that the Bandito gang in Houston does drug deal. Or
not Houston, they're from San Antonio.
Tell us about the operation.
Okay, I'm going to stop this right here because okay, you have to understand that this guy is a former Bandito. He left the gang, and he's been writing books about biker. He has a whole webpage about biker culture, and every once in a while he participates in those like A&E things about the bikers or gangster history, and he participates in those. So he's not a hard guy to find. So Bill O'Reilly is asking him about criminal activities of the Bandidos as if he's going to tell them, right? That would make him what the Bandidos would call a snitch, and he would be dead tomorrow. Because that's what they do when you snitch. When you leave the gang and you snitch, they kill you the next day, right?
You die.
So, yeah. So this is how ridiculous this moron is like asking these questions. It's just absolutely nuts. I have a Hunter Thompson clip to play, and shit, I'm not going to make it. This is going to have to be a two-part series. Let's see what else I got left on this. Some Randy Newman. But anyway, I would like to close to just say that, I'm not supposed to. I'm in Bandito territory, and I'm not supposed to mention that I'm from Oakland, and I used to live 12 blocks from the Oakland chapter of the motorcycle gang who will not be mentioned here. And I used to ride my little Triumph over there, and they lived on East 12th. They're the world headquarters of this notorious motorcycle gang called East 12th Street. That was 12 blocks from where I lived in East Oakland, and. They had a 7-Eleven right across the street that was open until 2 a.m. so you could go buy beer. And so I used to ride by there a lot, and they'd be out there working on their bikes and stuff, and they go, hey, you, come here, and I'm going, oh, shit. Because, I'm actually afraid of outlaw bikers, Even though, we would frequent the same bars, and I would keep my... mouth a little.
You, Scooter, you
yeah.
Keep your mouth closed.
Hey, man, I have fear as well.
Oh, wow.
I know them well enough to be afraid. And there's one thing about the thing that gives outlaw motorcycle gangs their strength is that they all have the big gangs and the 1%er outlaw motorcycle gangs have a rule that if anything, it doesn't matter what it happens, if your brother, one of the guys of the gang, like, no matter what happens, if anybody hits him or hurts him or anything like that, everybody is absolutely required, it's mandatory, to beat the crap out of him and everybody that's associated with him. That's where their strength comes from. And also, they have all these smaller gangs that pay tribute to them.
Enforcement, you know, one way or another, enforcement.
Right, it's gangster stuff. Now, there's four or five motorcycle gangs in the United States that kind of run all the other smaller motorcycle gangs, unless you're in a really isolated area. But you have to have permission. If me and you wanted to start a one percenter outlaw motorcycle gang and, you know, sell girls and run dope and guns and stuff like that, we would have to have an agreement. Here, we would have to have an agreement with the Bandidos. Right. If you were in other places, it might be the Outlaws, the Pagans, or so on. You know, they're like large corporations, except for they don't hurt as many people.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, yeah. So, I forgot where I was going with this. Anyway, it's an old culture. It's been around for a long time, and like I said, it flies under the radar because did you see that one of the guys that were caught from the Bandidos, the black guy? Oh, by the way, that's another thing about the Texas Bandido culture is it's not the Aryan racist stuff. You know, they have black people and Mexicans.
Whoa, how diverse.
They have diversity. I'm not saying they're good or they're bad or whatever, but at least they got that.
At least they have that.
They still got the swastikas in the SS, but they're not. Yeah.
Kind of confusing, but, you know, let's go with it. Huh?
I know. There's a movie that Jerry Garcia made with the Hell's Angels about 77 or something like that. And he asked the Jewish guy in the gang, like, well, why are you wearing swastikas? He goes, dude, we wear these to scare the crap out of people. That's all.
Effective.
We want you to be afraid, right? Be afraid. All right. So anyway, my heart goes out to all the guys, you know, the guys in the gang that, like, you know, the rule is when your brother gets hurt, you got to go after him. And a lot of fathers, just regular working guys and, you know, dumbasses like me, you know, got their heads blown off or knees out. And the rest of them are in jail for $1 million bail. So I don't understand why people are saying these guys are there's 170 people in jail that might spend the rest of their life in prison on RICO. So I don't agree that these guys are getting like a free pass compared and comparing them to protesters is ridiculous. It's just stupid. It's apples and oranges
I don't know what you could compare anything like that to. It's just a crazy story. I mean, it's a crazy event.
It's a crazy culture.
There we go.
It doesn't usually erupt into this level of violence in public like that. But like I said, that was a bad management decision. That was whoever made that management decision.
Gosh, where's the memo? Like, what's in the memo?
Yeah,
out?
We might be outnumbered, but we're just gonna break all the rules and we're gonna go down and we're gonna crash their party, even though they want to kill us.
The eyes have it.
Yeah, it took about 10 seconds for that fight to break out. So anyway. Let's go down. Stay tuned for Sweet Nightmares, and I don't know. I'll play the Hunter Thompson thing like something.
Took a black round. I got my hog out. Red line to the liquor store. Pain. Welcome to the sting of the midnight rain. Last hour all left wild and wrong. 700 pounds of burning chrome. Riding twisted, fire in the engine, tight fisted.